Hi, I'm Molly. Something terrible happened to me last year because of my best friend, Julie. It sounds crazy, but I was stuck at the bottom of the sea for 36 hours. Yes, at the bottom of the sea, underwater, for 36 hours, which is more than a day. You'll see that I'm not making it up when you hear my whole story. It all started when Julie showed me a photo. Molly, check this out. So I took her phone. Ethan, a guy that Julie met on Instagram, was holding the steering wheel of a boat and smiling. I never liked this guy, and this photo made me like him even less. It was so obvious that he was just a spoiled rich kid. So, I said, and gave the phone back to her. I could tell that she wanted something from me. He's inviting us to spend the weekend on his boat. I pretended not to understand. Us? How does he know me? He barely even knows you. You just message each other. She said, we talked on the phone for hours last night. Trust me, he's a great guy. Come on, let's go together. I immediately said, no way. What am I going to do on a boat with a total stranger for 2 days? So she said something she knew would work. What if he's a psycho? Are you going to leave me alone with a guy like that? This was the same sentence I used on her last month. I asked her to come with me when I was meeting a guy for the first time. So we went to the date together. She basically meant, now it's your turn. I had to say yes. On Saturday morning, we took a 3-hour bus ride to the beach town where Ethan lived. He picked us up and drove us to the boat. It wasn't too big, but it was so luxurious. There were 2 cabins below deck. Julie and I took over the big one. Ethan didn't seem like such a bad guy. I thought maybe I was wrong about him. When we came back, we were surrounded by water already on our way. Ethan was steering the boat. Please don't get me wrong, but don't captains drive boats like these? I asked. He smiled. Don't worry, this is a small yacht. I have a license to drive it. Anyway, we're not going to drive all the time. We'll find a good spot and anchor there, he said. Julie and I sat down to relax in the sun. It wasn't hot enough to wear a bikini, but the sun was still pretty strong. 2 or 3 hours later, we stopped. We anchored next to an island. Nobody lived on that part of the island, so it was just us, the sea, and nature. Ethan was a great host. He prepared all the food by himself. It felt like summer, even though it was the end of November. Julie didn't drink much, but Ethan and I got so drunk we could barely speak. He stood up. Your captain's about to pass out. I need to go to bed. The boat needs me tomorrow, he said, and wobbled his way to his cabin. After a while, we went back to our cabin as well. I was a little dizzy and got frustrated with myself for having drunk so much. I remember my head touching the pillow and I dozed off immediately. The sea was so calm when we went to bed. I don't know when the weather worsened and a huge storm began, but when I woke up, the yacht was rocking a lot. I looked for Julie, but she wasn't in her bed. At first, I thought I was dreaming, but of course I was not. I heard a pounding noise from below as if something was hitting the boat. With each hit, the boat would rise up and then quickly fall down. I knew it wasn't a good idea to go upstairs in such weather, but I had to find Julie. I tried to stand up, but it was impossible to stand on my feet. Just then, the boat swung hard. I tried to hold on to something, but I couldn't. I hit my back against the wall and screamed in pain. It hurt so much that I was sure I had broken something. The pain stopped after a while. I checked my arms, legs, and ribs. Nothing hurt, and I was relieved that nothing was broken. I suddenly realized the real danger. I was in a boat. There was a terrible storm outside, and boats tended to sink during storms. What was I supposed to do? Was I supposed to stay down here or try to go upstairs? I was thinking that the right thing to do was to go outside when the boat started to rock even more. It felt like the boat started moving. Had Ethan taken control of the boat? Were we going somewhere safe? I was trying to calm myself down when I heard a really loud noise. I realized that the movement was just due to the boat drifting, and we had crashed against the rocks surrounding the island. It was now clear what was about to happen. The boat was going to sink. I managed to get up because the boat wasn't rocking as much. I was trying to get to the door when suddenly it split in two and water started pouring into the cabin. It was what I had been afraid of. We were sinking. The water was pouring in so fast that I couldn't move through it. I went to the bathroom and shut the door. I took the towels from the cabinet and stuffed them under the door, but the water kept coming in. Until then, I had managed to stay calm. But now I had enough reasons to panic. The boat I was in had hit a rock in a storm and was sinking quickly, and I was stuck inside a tiny bathroom. For the first time, I thought I might actually die. I started yelling to get this thought out of my mind. Molly, use your brain! Come on! You have to find a way to get out of here. Use your brain! The bathroom kept filling with water, which had by now reached my knees. I stood up on the toilet. It was impossible to get out of here. The water was going to fill up this tiny bathroom soon. I don't know how much time had passed. I had resigned myself to my fate and was just waiting. The water was now up to my chest. At this point, I noticed that the bathroom seemed to be filling up more slowly. Was it a good idea to try to open the door, or was I supposed to wait until help came? But the water was still rising, albeit slower. Would I be able to survive until someone came to rescue me? There was no guarantee that someone would come. I decided to do a small experiment. I took a deep breath and dived in. I turned the door handle and pushed, but the door wouldn't budge. I tried again, but no luck. I came up when I was out of breath. Obviously, the boat had sunk. The door wouldn't open because the cabin was probably full of water. I was still alive, and I wasn't giving up. But what about Julie? Until that moment, I hadn't cried, but now I started sobbing and couldn't stop. Meanwhile, the water had risen more. What's worse, taking deep breaths while crying had used up a lot of oxygen, and I could feel there wasn't much of it left. I was in such bad shape that I couldn't tell how much time had passed. The water was now up to my chin. I was cold, I was hungry, I was thirsty, I was tired, and very sleepy. For a moment, I thought, let yourself go and let it all end. As a medical student, I was aware that it was hypothermia that made me think like this. I had been in cold water for a long time, so my body temperature had fallen, and it was going to continue to fall. I was losing hope that help would come. We weren't in open water, but who would look for us? Neither my parents nor Julie's knew that we were here. Would Ethan's family do something? I didn't think so. I thought this was the end for me. The water continued to rise slowly. It got so high that I had to stand on my toes to avoid drowning. Just then, I heard a sound. It was like someone had hit something a few times. I held my breath. The sound stopped. Maybe there was no sound. Maybe I was hallucinating because I was about to pass out. No! I heard the sound again, and this time it was closer. Anyways, if I was hallucinating, I would have heard my mom's voice or something. Why would I hear the sound of metal being hit? I dived into the water one more time. There was a soap dish made of stone. I grabbed it and came back up. I started hitting the wall with it. The other sound stopped. All you could hear was me hitting the wall. I stopped after a while. Then the sound from the outside started again. I was communicating with someone. They knew I was here. They turned out to be two divers from the search and rescue team. At first, they couldn't open the door because of the pressure. But they were there to save me. After a while, they managed to get me out of the bathroom and then out of the boat. There were doctors on the search and rescue ship. They had a lot of experience with such situations and were able to help me recover from hypothermia. As soon as I was feeling better, I asked about Julie. I found out that both she and Ethan were okay. Apparently, Ethan had diabetes, but he was too drunk to take his insulin shot. Diabetes patients lose consciousness in such situations and go into a coma after a while. Ethan somehow got himself to our cabin door and knocked. Julie helped him right away. She gave him his insulin shot, but he was still feeling very bad. Just then, the storm broke out, so he had no choice but to go upstairs. Julie went up with him too. Thankfully, she thought of putting on their life jackets. Ethan managed to start the engine, but the waves were too big and he couldn't prevent the boat from drifting. They fell into the water when the boat hit the rocks. Julie never left Ethan's side. The waves washed both of them onto the beach. Ethan had lost consciousness, so Julie couldn't leave him. The next day, a group of hikers accidentally came across them. They are both doing well now. After hearing this story, my first reaction was, they'll definitely get married after going through this together. After a horrific 36 hours, I managed to come back to life. I think I did pretty well overall. Of course, I got very lucky, but deciding to go into the bathroom, managing to stay calm, fighting the hypothermia, I definitely deserve a well done.
Hi, everyone. The protagonist of the story I'm about to tell you is a cook. He was trapped underwater for 62 hours. That's almost 3 days. He became the person who spent the longest time underwater, and thus part of naval history. But he didn't care about that at all. He grew to hate the sea and being a sailor after what he had to live through. He wouldn't even dip his feet in the sea from then on. Harrison O'Keen worked on a tugboat. For those who are not familiar with it, a tugboat is a kind of towing boat. These boats have really powerful engines, and they push and pull other boats or non-motorized vessels with the help of a thick tow line. The hero of our story was a cook on a tugboat just like that. One night, Harrison and his colleagues went into the cabin to get some rest after a long workday. And they locked themselves in, as they always did. Why did they lock the door? Because they were in an oil field in the Atlantic Ocean. It was off the coast of Nigeria. Ships frequently got attacked by pirates there. That's why the crew always locked themselves in their cabins, for safety. Harrison went to sleep at the same time as the other crew members. But he had to wake up a little earlier to prepare breakfast. He got up from his bed as he did every morning. It was so hot inside that he was only wearing shorts. There was a small toilet and a bathroom inside the cabin. Harrison went into the toilet and shut the door. In oceanography, there's a type of wave called a monster wave, or killer wave. As the name suggests, these are dangerously large waves. They appear on the surface of the sea unexpectedly, even with no trace of a storm. This is a natural event that scares sailors the most. It was one of those waves that caused the tugboat Harrison and his friends were on to suddenly sink. The depth of the water there was 30 meters or 100 feet. The tugboat sunk very quickly. It capsized after hitting the ocean floor. It all happened in a flash. Unfortunately, the 11 crew members that were in the bedroom with Harrison drowned instantly. Only one person survived, and that was the cook, who was in the tiny toilet. The toilet Harrison was in had a metal door. The door had kept the water outside. This lucky man survived the accident because he was awake and in a place where the water couldn't rush in. But he didn't know what was going on. He wasn't hearing any sounds. The commotion outside had stopped. Had the boat sunk? What had happened to his friends? Should he leave the toilet or wait inside? He thought about it for a while. He finally decided to get out of there. It wasn't easy to open that metal door. He tried pushing it, but it wouldn't budge. The pressure from the water prevented it from opening. He pushed again as hard as he could. The door moved just a little. Harrison kept pushing. When the door opened just enough for him to pass through, he quickly got out. Harrison was shocked by what he saw inside the cabin. All his friends had drowned. He was really sad, but there was nothing he could do. He was almost out of breath. He had to get out of the boat as quickly as possible. Harrison tried to swim towards the cabin door. The key was in the lock, but the current inside was stopping him from moving forward. He struggled for some time. If he couldn't get out, this cabin would be his grave. But he couldn't move. The current pushed him towards the bathroom on the other side, and the first miracle took place there. The bathroom wasn't completely filled with water. There was a small air pocket left. Harrison lifted his head up from the water as soon as he got there. He took a very deep breath. If he had stayed underwater a few more minutes, he would have shared the same fate as his friends. Meanwhile, a rescue ship had arrived at the scene of the accident. Divers marked the point where the tugboat had sunk. They dove right in. When they reached the boat, they realized it had capsized. The equipment the divers had with them allowed them to go down to a certain depth. They reached 30 meters, but they couldn't stay down there for a long time. After a short probe, they decided there were no survivors of the accident. Moreover, there were sharks in this area. After a while, they came up to the surface, having lost hope. Since they couldn't get inside the boat, Harrison didn't hear the divers arriving. He stayed in that bathroom for about a day. He was a religious person, so he prayed a lot. He was thinking that God would definitely save him. But there was an issue he had to deal with on his own. He'd been in the water for a long time. Because he was in so deep, the water was naturally cold, so the possibility of hypothermia was high. For those who are not familiar with it, let me briefly explain what hypothermia means. The average temperature for adults is around 97 to 98 degrees Fahrenheit. If this temperature falls below 95 degrees Fahrenheit, hypothermia occurs, and it's a life-threatening condition. If the person's body temperature doesn't go back to normal levels, first they feel mentally confused, and then they lose consciousness. When the first symptoms started, Harrison knew that he couldn't stay there any longer. He had to get off that boat and, of course, out of the water, too. The 29-year-old cook dove into the water again. The captain's quarter was next door. The bathroom had a door that opened into that room. He swam there. He made it to the room. He wasn't going to be able to hold his breath any longer. He went up towards the surface. It was there that the second miracle took place. There was a small air pocket in the captain's room as well. This allowed him to hold on to dear life for a second time. After these consecutive miracles, here comes the third miracle that saved Harrison's life. This time, our hero saw that there was a mattress next to him. It was floating close to the floor. He pulled it up. He got on top of it. That's how he managed to get out of the water. This saved him from the risk of hypothermia. Harrison had been under the water for nearly 2 days. He was very hungry because he hadn't eaten anything. More importantly, he hadn't drunk any water. Humans can go without eating for about 3 weeks, but we can only go at most 3 to 4 days without drinking water. You know that 60% of our body is made up of water. Drinking water is vital for us. But don't worry, the young cook got lucky about that too. After Harrison got on top of the mattress, he saw that there was a life jacket on the water surface as well. He took it and put it on. There were tiny flashlights on the life jacket. He switched them on. When the room lit up, he noticed something that he wasn't able to see before. There was a can of Coke floating right beside him. He was so happy to see it. He grabbed the can, he opened it and drank half. With that, he was able to quench his thirst. He didn't drink it all because he didn't know how much longer he was going to stay there. After that, every time he got thirsty, he took a few sips. It had been nearly 60 hours. The flashlights had died on him. He was listening to the sounds in the dark. But all he heard was either other bodies hitting things or the sounds of sharks feeding on them. Harrison was losing hope. He started praying again. He had no idea at the time, but the help he was seeking was only 100 feet away. The company that owned the tugboat had hired an expert team of divers to extract the bodies of the sailors. The men from the rescue ship had arrived at the scene and were ready. Soon, 6 divers dove in. They built a small elevator in the water. They were going to pull up the poor sailors in this elevator. The divers had a wireless video transmission system, so they could communicate with each other and the team above. Someone on the boat was following them from the screen. When the divers reached the boat, they got to work. After an hour-long struggle, they were able to enter the tugboat. They pulled the first 4 bodies they found up in the elevator. Meanwhile, Harrison started to hear something. These sounds were different from the others. He thought the rescue team might have arrived, but he wasn't sure. Just then he realized there was a shadow moving in the water. At first, he was scared that it was a shark, but it was a diver. He reached out and grabbed his arm. Scared, the diver pulled his arm back. He turned his camera in that direction to see who it was. When the person who was following the operation from the ship saw a person on the screen, he screamed, "He's alive! There's a survivor in there!" The diver quickly came up to the surface where he was. He saw a man inside that small air pocket. He was so happy to see him. The divers wanted to get the sole survivor out of the water as quickly as possible. But there was a major issue. Harrison could get the bends as he was being pulled up. What does that mean? When a person moves from a high-pressure environment to a low-pressure environment too quickly, a medical condition called decompression sickness or the bends occurs. This is a very dangerous condition. In order to prevent Harrison from getting the bends, they brought in special equipment from the rescue ship. They put a special helmet on him and pulled him up to the surface in the elevator. After 62 hours, Harrison saw sunlight for the first time. First, he shed tears of joy and then of sadness for the 11 friends he lost in the accident. The young cook's family lived in a small village in Nigeria. They took him to his village right away. His wife, who thought he had died, fainted when she saw her husband. This village was particularly known for its devoutness. After a while, the local priest visited Harrison. The priest said, "I'm going to ask you something. Please answer it honestly. 11 people passed away in this accident. You survived inside a boat submerged in the ocean for 3 days. The villagers are saying this is only possible with black magic. I trust you, but I still wanted to ask you if you indeed used magic." Harrison had heard about the rumors too. In fact, he hadn't been able to go to his friend's funeral. He was scared of the reaction of the other family since he was the only one to survive. He answered the priest's question calmly. "I'm a simple cook. I don't know anything about black magic. I just prayed the whole time I was underwater. I thought about my wife and my family. I wished for them to see me again. And God helped me." Harrison got a job working at a restaurant far away from the sea and went on to live a simple life as a cook.
"Hi, I'm Katerina. I'm 16. I'm going to tell you a story about something super scary that happened to me. Are you scared of the dark? You will be. So, both my parents are archaeologists. Sounds amazing, right? Action. Adventure. Gold treasure. Nope. They both work in a university and read a lot of books. Dad is obsessed with old pots. Mom is all about soil. That's right, soil. Like, dirt. Oh, and before you ask, no, they don't dig up dinosaurs. Don't ask about dinosaurs. They get asked that a lot. But having archaeologists for parents isn't all bad. We get to travel a lot. But wherever we go, Mom and Dad do one thing. Dig holes. They dig holes in the desert. They dig holes in forests. They dig holes in the mountains. They dig holes in the jungle. No matter where we are in the world, Mom and Dad just want to know what's under the ground. Mom and Dad's travel photos are, well, not for everyone. Mine, on the other hand, I love taking pictures. My camera is my most treasured possession. Sometimes I wish Mom and Dad would look up from their holes in the ground. They'd realize what amazing experiences they're missing. But little did I know that our trip to the Amazon rainforest would end up a really scary experience. Mom and Dad were invited to help on a research dig searching for an ancient temple. Dad was excited. Mom was excited. I was so excited. The most important rule was to stay close to the dig and the camp, because it is super easy to get lost. And if you get lost, no one will ever find you. And the wild jaguars get pretty hungry. It was so remote, and I couldn't even use my phone. One night, we were sitting round the campfire. The sunset looked so pretty. I wanted to take a picture, but I couldn't find my camera. I turned my tent upside down looking for it, but I couldn't find it anywhere. I was so upset. My camera was everything to me. Mom and Dad were just focused on their work and didn't seem to take it at all seriously. Mom told me to look in my bag. I had already looked there. Dad told me to look in my sleeping bag. I had already looked there. I was frustrated that they didn't help me look. I tried to remember the last picture I had taken. Then I remembered. I was photographing this amazing butterfly when Lewis, the head archaeologist, handed me a water bottle, and I put the camera down on a tree stump. I had left my camera at the dig site. It was getting dark, but I thought I would just have time to run to the site, grab my camera, and return to camp. I should have told Mom and Dad where I was going. Of course I should, but I was angry at them for not helping me look for my camera. Sure enough, my beloved camera was exactly where I left it. I was so relieved. I scooped it up, and just then I heard a sound in the trees. I hoped it was something cute and cuddly, but then I remembered the hungry jaguars. I didn't wait to find out what it was. I crawled backwards super slowly, and there are no prizes for guessing what was behind me. Yep, a gigantic hole in the ground. Thanks, Mom. Thanks, Dad. Thankfully, it wasn't deep enough for me to be really hurt. I stood up, looked around. The earth at the one side of the hole trembled, and then it fell away to reveal an enormous carved door. And I know what you're thinking. Katerina, no one would be crazy enough to walk through an ancient door, in the dark, in the middle of the rainforest, on their own. And you're right. I'm not at all that crazy. Just then, the ground underneath me shook. And I fell through some kind of trapdoor into an ancient tomb. Lucky, my camera had a light on it. I shone it around the enormous room. It was astonishing to think this amazing tomb had been down here this whole time, and I was the first person to see these beautiful carvings for hundreds and hundreds of years. But also, it was cold, and it smelled bad, and I realized that Mom and Dad would be worried about me. I thought about what could be down here with me. Spiders. Snakes. I took my mind off it by looking at the tomb in more detail. All around me were beautiful objects. Carved cups and bowls, beautiful statues. I reached out and picked one of them up. It was covered in dust. I rubbed it carefully and then... it was made of gold! My parents are archaeologists, but I was the one who had found treasure. But I was still trapped in an ancient tomb. I had to find a way out. Just then, I felt the wind on my face. Perhaps there was another way out. I crept carefully down a long passageway. I felt something in my hair. Ew! I thought it must be spiders, but when I looked up, it was the roots of the rainforest coming down into the passageway. I felt the wind again and kept going. Then all of a sudden, I could see light up ahead. It must be the light of our camp. But before I could get to it, I saw that the path below my feet had fallen away and there was a deep chasm. I was still trapped. Just then, I heard people calling my name. Katerina! Called Mom's voice. Katerina! Called Dad's voice. I called back, Mom, Dad, I'm down here! But my voice echoed back at me from the stone walls of the tomb. How could I have been so stupid as to run off to find my camera without letting them know where I was going? Up ahead, I could see a tiny slither of light coming through the ceiling. It was so low that if I got to it, I was sure I'd be able to get out of the tomb. I reached up and tugged at one of the roots above my head to see if it would take my weight. But then I stopped myself. If running off had been dumb, surely trying to get across the chasm was even dumber? But then I heard a noise behind me. There was definitely something in here with me. I grabbed the tree roots one after the other, swinging myself across the empty chasm. I sprinted towards the light, but when I got closer, I could see the hole was tiny. There's no way I could get through. I called out, Mom! Dad, I'm down here! Help! I saw Mom and Dad's feet running towards me. Katerina, what are you doing down there? Dad sounded worried. Dad, there's no time! There's something down there with me! Luckily for me, if there's one thing my parents can do really, really fast, it's dig. I heard something move in the dark. Something was coming closer and closer. Could my parents dig fast enough to get me out before it caught me? Yes, they could. I had been trapped in a tomb with a hungry jaguar. So that's how I got trapped in an ancient tomb, and how I got out again. Mom and Dad were kind of furious, but then they saw the jaguar and they were just glad I was okay. Plus, they absolutely loved the gifts I brought back up for them. So, am I rich now I discovered gold treasure? Nope. Lewis and his team are busy excavating the tomb to learn all we can about the ancient people who lived and died here. Am I going to tell you exactly where this tomb was? Nope. No matter how many comments you leave below this video. And you'll only get hunted by hungry jaguar if you do try to find it. But Mom and Dad were so scared that they nearly lost me that for once I managed to get them look up from digging holes and see how amazing this place is.